Jim Gallison. I am a tech writer for a Silicon Valley company, and I have a kind of hobbyist interest in observing political systems and propaganda and anti-science.
This is a continuing episode of a series about fascism and science fiction. Is there anything we should have talked about that we haven't talked about yet?
Oh, we could go on and on about, especially, you know, science fiction. We only touch the surface. I mean, there are so many other novels and films that deal with these sorts of issues because it's a very interesting problem. It's a universal problem. It's something societies around the world have to deal with, the uneasy relationship between society and the individual, which I think is... The Prisoner is one of the greatest treatments of that in fiction, of that tension between people and the environment they construct around them. So there's even one episode of The Prisoner in which they accuse our hero, number six, of being unmutual. And the treatment for that is psychosocial surgery, is like a lobotomy with sound waves. and at one point, one of the characters comments that he belongs to the cult of the individual.
Oh, dear. Right. Yeah, I once had a neighbor. I moved to a different part of the country in a red state. And one of my neighbors, it was really... She's older than me. I'm trying to set the stage a little bit. So she's in her 60s. And her reason to me that she gave me for why I should vote a certain way was that this is what most people are going to be voting for.
There you go.
Wow. Okay. So you're big into cohesion and aligning with some whoever your instructor is. And that's how you vote.
Yeah. Well, that's a classic propaganda technique called the bandwagon.
Oh, that's right.
Technique.
Yeah.
You know, in the 1930s, fascist propaganda from Germany was being broadcast in the United States quite freely. And there was a group of people who wrote a book called The Fine Art of Propaganda. And it's a study of a Catholic priest out of Chicago. And the radio broadcasts he would do, which were pro-fascist, pro-German radio broadcasts. And so this book would print them and then dissect them and show which propaganda techniques were being used to influence the audience. And so that one there is basically called bandwagon.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, get on the bandwagon. Everybody's doing it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that I'm going to speak a little bit more about micro-targeting. That's a really insidious one because there's factions within our society that are getting different messages than the other parts of society. And so you start running into people who have this completely different, like, angle or thought process or reality than others. And it's like really hard to deal with that. I remember once when I was flying on an airplane and it was, you know, you're stuck with a group of people that you don't know. It was from Minneapolis to probably Montana might have been the route. And so we're talking like maybe Midwestern people mostly. And it was weird because there was a guy on there who was complaining about how his brother worked for Google and there was a crying room at Google. He says that if he had to go somewhere to release all of that, he would go there and cry. And this, you could see, you know, I'm looking at this guy, I'm like, okay, he looks like he's probably a blue collar worker guy. And it looks like he's probably, he doesn't like his brother, and his brother probably makes a lot of money working at Google, and so there's a little bit of like something going on there, and so he's a little fed up. But then there's like other people nodding their heads in the play, and I'm going, what the hell? These people are clearly watching the same channel, and it's a different channel than I am. So that was quite an experience.
Well, that certainly is one of the things we face now is micro-targeting now can actually create subpopulations that have completely incommensurate views of reality.
Hmm.
And that's, I don't know how you fix that. If you can't agree on basic facts,
right.
Like I was having a discussion with a guy on Facebook a few months ago who believed nothing could go higher than 400 miles above the earth. And so I was I'm prideful and egotistical enough to believe that if I just present an argument with some facts, I can sway people who are this far, you know, this far along in the world of conspiracy theory. And that's actually never been the case. I don't think I've ever actually changed anyone's mind who believes conspiracy theories like these. But nevertheless, I foolishly persist. So I said, well, how do you think the GPS system on your phone works? And he said, oh, it's because of cell phone towers. And I'm going, okay, so the architecture you're proposing is cell phone tower triangulation, which does happen all the time.
Right? GPRS. That does work. That's the RS on the, I think. On the.
But I said, what happens when there are no cell phone towers in range of your phone? And he says, GPS doesn't work. And I'm like, okay, so, well, why don't you read this post by this lady who shows you how to, like, walk around in national parks using your iPhone and only GPS, right? What do you think is happening there? I say, you can go test it. If you want, right now, you can take your phone and you can go out into your local national park where there's no cell towers around for miles, and you can still navigate.
Yeah.
Usually that's where the conversation kind of just dies.
Because it requires a commitment of resources on his part, and you know that requires motivation. And if he's already made up his mind, why should he spend resources and time on something he's not motivated to do?
Well, right, and like the flat earthers recently, who went on a sponsored trip down to Antarctica so they could observe the 24-hour sun. You know, that was quite amazing. And I've seen a number of other shows where flat earthers tried to do experiments to show that the world is not round. And what's funny is when their experiments show, well, no, actually, you just proved the world is round just now with that experiment you just did. And then they scratch their heads and kind of like go back. And it's like, well, what do you think about sailors? I mean, people at sea, you've been watching masts disappear over the horizon for, well, you know, thousands of years. What do you think is happening there? It's amazing the lengths that people will go to hang on to these truly irrational beliefs, and you know what emotional payoff they get I don't know.
I think it goes back to bandwagon effect, that their social circle is reinforcing those effects, and so they want to be part of that social circle. They feel good about it. There's even like some network TV shows that help reinforce that too and make them feel good, because they don't have to have cognitive dissonance about that the world's different than what they believe it should be, or that they believe it is, either way.
Well, being, again, it's in-group and out-group, right? It's like, I'm in the in-group. We know really what's going on, right? Everyone else is duped. That's a very powerful narcotic.
Yeah, totally.
Also, critical thinking is a skill, right? And like any skill, you have to practice it.
Mm.
And also, it has to be taught. And of course, we don't really teach critical thinking skills in any real way in our mandatory education. And certainly, there are a lot of people who don't want you to learn critical thinking skills, because then you start questioning things you're just not supposed to question.
Mm.
So that's how you get sort of quasi-theocratic governments, like in parts of the United States, you know, where it's like people will tell you, well, you know, that what you're saying contradicts the Bible and therefore must be wrong, or that's just your book learning, you know, that's made you stray away from the truth of, you know, the one true book.
Right.
So, and you know, there's just, I'm old enough now that I don't even I used to try to engage people on some of these points, you know, things that I believed in, like, you know, climate science, right? It's like, it's actually not that hard to understand how Earth's climate works,
right?
At least at sort of first order principles. And I was an editor on a graduate level textbook on climate science. So I actually am very familiar with the math and the physics involved with it, but you don't have to be to understand how it works. And I tried numerous occasions to engage with climate science denialists, and man, that is glued tight. It is just impossible to get them to, like, even begin to contemplate anything other than it's a liberal conspiracy, you know, and that's as far as they will go. And they'll, I got called so many names. It was like being on the playground in second grade, you know.
Where were you at? What was the setting here where people were calling you names?
I think there was like one famous climate denialist on the, I think it was the Daily Mail. It was one of the UK papers, and they had published just some rubbish that was completely wrong about how climate science works. And so I, again, I'm prideful enough to believe if I just state this in a neutral educational tone, like, this is just, this is what really happens. And it's cool. If you actually learn this, it's like, you learn all sorts of great stuff, because climate science doesn't just work on Earth. It works for all the other planets. So you can, like, use climate science to estimate the surface temperature of Mars and the surface temperature of Venus, and even the temperatures of the gas giants, right? But of course, my error is in thinking that people care about the surface temperature of Mars. Right, they don't at all.
Probably don't even know that it's... They vaguely know it's in the solar system, but they don't know if it's an inner planet, outer planet, or where it's at. That's true.
No, it's true. It's like, if it doesn't impact their daily lives, then, you know, it's just not something that a lot of people are willing to consider. I had a friend who ran into... He was, I think he was in Dominican Republic. He was there for vacation. He ran into a couple from the Netherlands, of all places. And somehow Jurassic Park came up. And they made a comment about, oh, wasn't it cool, all those monsters that Steven Spielberg made up?
No.
But my friend was like, you know, dinosaurs really existed. And they just laughed at him. They just had,
oh, I see,
completely did not believe him and were not interested in knowing anything more about it. To them, they were just pure fantasy monsters.
What the heck? I've never met somebody who went that far, but I believe they exist.
Well, my name's Jim Gallison. I am a tech writer for a Silicon Valley company. And I have a kind of hobbyist interest in observing political systems and propaganda and anti-science. I'm in particular concerned about the rise of the forces of anti-science, because that affects all of our lives. Our lives depend entirely on science and engineering now in our technological culture. And yet there is a very strong current of disbelief in the ability of science to understand the world, which can range from as simple as, oh, I think that the Earth is the center of the solar system, and who cares whether you believe that, to the immediate concerns about vaccines and whether vaccines work and whether I should vaccinate my children, which is a much more important scientific matter that people should basically take the word of the experts on, right? So for a lot of my adult life, I have been observing politics. My moment was when I watched the Iran-Contra hearings. My moment of realization, I'd been somewhat apolitical before that, but I had that summer off. I had just graduated, and I wasn't working at Boeing yet. So I watched the Iran-Contra hearings, and I was horrified to see what actually was being revealed, and that the executive branch was out of control. And we'd been taught, of course, there are three co-equal branches of government, but I learned watching that in fact, no, they are not in any sense co-equal. The executive was already out of control, right? So this is like the summer of 1987. And from there, it was a pretty easy prognostication to make that we are going to descend into an authoritarian or a fascist state. So I've been on the lookout for that for most of my adult life. And, well, you know, we have arrived. So How exciting for us all.
Wee!
What a brave new world. My call to action to people is to remain skeptical of political power and keep your eyes open and use critical thinking skills. Please read sources of news from outside of our country. Please read Reuters and AFP and BBC, and you know, they're all flawed and they all have their own biases, but if you read enough of these different sources, you can kind of triangulate on just a general understanding of what is happening in the world, because it matters what's happening in the world. It matters to you personally, and you have an effect on the people around you by having that understanding of the world. And so when you may not have an interest in politics, but that doesn't mean that politics will not take an interest in you.
Is there supposed to be an evil laugh at that point? Cue evil laugh.
I'm quoting there. That's the message that I have to people. And also, please don't embrace this anti-expertise bias that has become popular in the last 10 years. Like, oh, experts don't know anything. Or as Homer Simpson once said, eggheads, what do they know? So yeah, I'm quoting Pericles, the Greek general, when I say that just because you don't take an interest in politics doesn't mean politics won't take an interest in you.
Cool. Hey, Jim, are you a fan of Ground News?
I've seen it. I don't read it regularly, but I think it's a good source.
Yeah. So Ground News is a system. It's somehow associated with a NASA scientist or a group of NASA scientists who got together and came up with a way to measure bias in news sources. So it's kind of nice because it at least you can understand what your diet is. You're looking at the ingredients box of your news and you can see if it's right wing, left wing, or other factions. And so that's really good because if you're taking a steady diet of either extreme, you probably need to tone it down.
Yeah, I think that there's also that other RAF. I forget what they're called, but they do that big chart, the big media bias chart.
Yeah.
Let's see if the Ab Fontes media chart. Yeah. And, you know, I really appreciate what they're trying to do there, but I find that I pretty strongly disagree with a lot of their outcomes, a lot of their placements of news sources in the, I mean, you know, they'll do things like show that Jezebel is a less reliable source than like the Chinese news, like official Chinese news outlets, you know, and it's like, I don't know how you possibly can, like the Epic Times, right? Oh. I mean, that's just like pure state propaganda, right? And I don't know how you say that anything is less. So I quibble with, I mean, the ones around the center of their media bias chart, yeah, I more or less agree with. But when they go out into more of the, you know, far left or far right on the graph, I'm like, you know, I think it's important to understand that, you know, in the United States, there is no left. There's literally no left on the political spectrum. It was destroyed in the 1960s by assassinations and by the consolidation of media into a few powerful global corporations, right? And so when people are accused of being leftist in the United States, I have to laugh. I mean, what we have is center, center right, far right, fascist. That's all we have. That's our political spectrum. That's the Overton window in the United States. There are no social democrats in the United States. It's like nothing like what you would call a leftist, as you would see in Europe, say.
Mm. Jim, well, thanks for the show. You put a lot of work into this, and I appreciate you and you're bringing your knowledge to share with us.
Thank you. It was great fun. I always enjoy our chats, Lance.
Check out the show notes because we have got an amazing plethora of information that you will be interested in. We have visualizations of fascism over time. We have tables of how science fiction rates at different levels of fascism. And we have, of course, our very own United States of America rated there with a graph on the increasing levels of fascism. This is the last episode of the series. If you're like my friend Kevin and you missed the first episode, go ahead and type into your favorite search engine, Sci-Fi Thoughts Fascism, and your search engine will do its magic and it will find our series page for you.